Okay, I didn't say very much that didn't make it to tape, other than the model of the degradation, which is a convolutional degradation, could be blurry, could be motion. We're going to look at a couple different types of degradation, and additive noise. Okay? And now, what restoration is given, and we're going to use the notation GXY, that is G is the image, position XY, to denote basically a messed up image. It's noisy and something else. Now, it's rare that we would have something that would be degraded, but no noise, but we will show you a couple examples of that. But usually both occur. And the idea is we have a convolution or multiplication in the frequency domain, an addition, and the question is, how in the world do we get rid of both of those? Okay? Now, since it's not up there, our degraded image is whatever our degradation function is convolved with f of xy plus the noise. And I'll use eta in the spatial domain for the noise, or in the frequency domain, h of uv times f of uv plus capital N of uv. Now, it turns out that this is not the only model that you can have. There are kinds of degradations, especially nonlinear degradations, that we can't model. We're going to limit ourselves to a couple here. And there's been a lot of published work. It turns out that one of the things which will be important to us is, you notice there's a little F hat down here. I don't know if it shows up really very well on that at all, but that's an F hat at the output of the restoration filter, and the idea is F hat is an estimate of F of XY. Now, what we're going to use a lot is we're going to use estimates of the noise, models of the degradation function, and put those together to give some kind of best estimate of fxy. Now, this is where the math gets really nasty. When people talk about best, that usually means optimization, that usually means least mean squared error, or all kinds of other estimates. It also means statistics, because we have noise, which is a random process. So the first thing we're going to talk about a little bit is different kinds of noise distributions. And we're also going to talk about how can you estimate them from your picture, from a picture that you might have. You might have a noisy picture. There are ways to estimate it. Now, there are a couple types. Gaussian noise is actually the model that we will almost always use. Okay? Gaussian noise is characterized by a Gaussian distribution. It's got a mean mu, and it's got a width that we characterize or call a standard deviation, sigma. Okay? Now, the best kind of noise is zero mean. That is, that it's symmetric about zero, it can have positive and negative values. That is not the only kind that you have. You can have a whole lot of other distributions which are somewhat similar. You can get a skewed Gaussian, which is called a Rayleigh. This is very, very common actually in propagation, cell phone reception, things like that. You can't have it go to zero, but the characteristics change as it goes to zero. So it's skewed. Just think of it as a crunched up Gaussian, but it doesn't include zero. There is a gamma distribution, which starts to look a lot like a Gaussian that you've just squished into the zero axis. Okay? And that's basically it. Notice that it will basically include zero here. Now, when this starts getting squished more and more into the zero axis, we may just switch to an exponential. So you can sort of see the progression. Gaussian, Rayleigh, gamma, exponential. In general, you'd probably use this one or this one. Only if you're publishing research papers or really doing some serious work would you probably use these two. And you'd have to have a good reason why you'd want to use those two. Now, there are two other types, uniform or white noise. And basically, we tend to think of white noise as existing with all possible values, but we're always going to be dealing with band-limited, spatially limited functions. So usually, the noise will exist only between two limits. Now, it might be 0 and 255, but you can also find noise which exists between different limits. Characteristic, though, is over that distribution, it's uniform. Mathematically, this is nice. It's just going to end up being a constant with two limits on the integral. And then, the last one is our impulse noise, salt and pepper noise. Some of you have actually asked me about processing it in images and stuff. And typically, we might have one, two, or more impulses. We might have an impulse for salt. We might have an impulse for pepper. Okay, salt gesundheit. I knew pepper caused those reactions. But basically, we'll call salt white noise. It's going to be ones. Pepper is going to be black noise, and it's going to be zeros. And you notice that these aren't exactly really black or white. They're just two kinds of noise. You know, they're gray values, and they'll have different probabilities. The height is always the probability. Now, most of the time, in image processing, what we actually have are histograms. And our probability density functions for our images are simply the histograms of the image. Now, we don't have to do histograms of the whole image. We can take histograms of sections of an image. Okay, I think that's everything out of there. So let's take a look at an image. This is a test image. It's going to be used to illustrate a couple different distribution functions. Now, I didn't write out mathematically, since they were on the slides, the distribution functions. This is going to be a nice simple image. We've got black, we've got white, and a gray in the middle. And we're going to show what happens when we add different kinds of noise to it, and in each different region. So we'll have the noise in the black region, the noise in the gray, and the noise in the white. Because remember, what you basically will have then is that background function. If you would do your histogram, and I don't know what the exact numbers are, but, okay, white, gray, black. And we're going to use actually ZI for gray levels. That'll be the standard notation. And this will then become the probability of each individual gray level. And I don't know what the actual probabilities are of each of those since I didn't add them up. I just guessed what they are. Okay. Now that I look at it, the white might act, looks like, okay, it's pretty big. Gray, okay, but this might actually be much higher than what I drew here. So I just was doing something descriptive there. Now let's add some noise, and we're going to add all the different types of noise. Okay. We add Gaussian noise. Okay. Now this is interesting because here is now the distribution within each of the regions. You can see, wow, in fact, actually, when I look at it, it must be that we had a lot more black, medium amount of gray, and actually smaller amounts. Okay, but notice what happened. When we added Gaussian noise, the histogram within each distribution, within each region, is actually changing considerably. It's not a constant value. It's a distribution. And you notice that actually does look Gaussian, doesn't it? If you would look at a histogram of an image and you could somehow break it up like that, and you saw distributions, you could look at that and say that it's Gaussian. Now this one's much tougher. Can you sort of look at that and tell that it's Rayleigh? It's a little shifted one side or the other, but it's not immediate. It's not that immediately obvious. Yes, it is indeed shifted. It probably looks better from the back to see the shift. And notice the gamma over there. It's definitely skewed towards one side. These are symmetric, shifted. Okay? And if you're taking Leparo's course, you've probably been through all of this kind of stuff many, many, many times. But this is what it looks like in images. An exponential, pretty obvious. Now, a lot of you might look at uniform noise and say, boy, that doesn't look very uniform. But if you see sharp boundaries, that's usually a uniform noise. Okay, and then salt and pepper, and it doesn't show up very well. You've got your blacks down here and your whites, and here's your major components. You see it's all black, basically a gray, that light and that dark. So when you see impulses, you've got salt and pepper noise. Now, here is another type of noise, and this one actually, a lot of effort is spent on getting rid of it. It's periodic noise, sinusoidal noise. We're actually going to come back to an image similar to that. The first thing that we looked at in the tool you want to use to characterize noise is the probability density function, the histogram. The second thing you want to use to characterize noise is take the Fourier transform of an image. Now, if you look at that, to me, I see periodicity in there. Doesn't that look like a piece of fabric? You know, it looks like a piece of cloth. And that, you know, if you think about the way a cloth is woven, you have threads in parallel, vertical and horizontal. And that's effectively what you're seeing here. You're seeing some kind of weaving. Now, where things look really interesting in the frequency domain, and when you have a noisy image, plot the histogram and then do a Fourier transform. And there's something really odd about this. Notice that you've got this really nice circular distribution here. You don't normally find that in a natural scene. I think this is actually a moon rock. A lot of our images are NASA images, so I think that's a moon rock image. But the first thing should be, that looks like periodic noise. That's probably from the sensor or from the detector, or it could conceivably even be from the transmission scheme, how the image is coded. So you have to be a little bit of a detective. This is your CSI image. Okay? You have to find out not where the noise is coming from, but what it looks like. And if you do that, then there are a variety of techniques for getting rid of it. Now, how in the world do you come up with something to describe the noise in an image when you're given an image you've never seen before? You don't know anything about it. Well, what you do is you sort of go back to the original image. And actually, I guess I didn't need to go back that far. You take any of these noisy ones, and what you want to do is find regions which you think should be moderately uniform. Now, this might be looking at a sky. This might be looking at a section of gray pavement. But you want to pick something that you think should be uniform. It might be the side of a building. And it could be a large area, it could be a small area. But you want to look for a uniform region and then plot histograms for those areas. So this might be a section of the image. And, you know, that would be in the grayscale section between the noisy black and the noisy white. And you plot the distribution, the histogram, just for that piece. And notice how that comes out, and you can see, oh, gee, that's probably a pretty good estimate. Well, we'll get to it, but that's probably a Gaussian. We picked these from the other two functions, which were the Rayleigh and the, what was it, uniform? Oh, yes. I should have been able to look at that. Don't worry if the tops aren't uniform. It's uniform. Usually these sharp edges are the things that give it away. But don't worry. Uniform will have a pretty noisy distribution. And what you can do, and this is the part which you have to do, you have to compute. Mean and variance. And all of this is digital. So you'll almost always compute the variance. Notice that I keep using Z a lot the way our book does. That's our random variable. And we'll just do a sum. Usually these are over the complete region, not over the whole image. They're over a uniform piece of the image. And we'll compute the variance, which is just going to be the square the Zoom type. Okay. So we can come up with means and variances from areas that are uniform. At least we expect them to be uniform within the image. Now, you may be really in big trouble. You may get an image that has so much detail in it, you can't do anything. If you've got something like that, well, the best thing you can do is try and take another couple images or hope that you can get some more. It's hard to estimate statistics, but you're going to need to compute means and variances over and over again. Now, let's take a look at some more filters. And there's a whole bunch of new filters here which you haven't seen before. Remember way back in Chapter 2 where I talked about the mean filter and median filter? Well, here we're going to talk about more. Okay. We're going to use an X-ray image of a printed circuit board, and a couple of the things that you really want to watch out for are going to be the electrical fingers. Notice the width of the fingers, how they're going to get large or small. So that's an original image, no noise, at least not a large amount of noise. It's a pretty clean image. We add additive Gaussian noise, okay, that kind of distribution. And I don't have down what the mean is, or rather what the standard deviation is of the Gaussian. But we're going to do two kinds of filters here. We do an arithmetic mean filter and something new, a geometric mean filter. Okay, arithmetic is average. And I'll use the notation like our book. We're going to be working in a little neighborhood. So S and T is whatever the size of our neighborhood is. And it might be just a 3x3, 5x5. Those are going to be your typical things. Okay, so that's all the notation is. We sum up all the pixel values. We divide it by, in this case, if it were 3x3, 9, and you get your average, okay, and the idea, or your f-hat, and the idea is you would run it over each 3x3 in there, and you would replace the value in here with that mean. Now, you know that that tends to blur things, okay? There is another type of filter, and called the geometric mean. Looks pretty much the same. It's got the GSTs, but it's a continued product. It's the product of all of the pixels. Same neighborhood. And we take the root. So if we've got 9 elements, we take the 9th root. Okay? And actually, this is not a bad filter. And you can, it's hard to tell on this. You can see that the contrast on the fingers is much better with the geometric mean than with the arithmetic mean. With little objects, what does the arithmetic do? It averages it. It blurs it. It makes it gray. This keeps good high contrast. Keeps detail. Okay? We're going to look now at this image over and over with different kinds of noise, different kinds of filters. So this is just sort of an overview of all of the different filters that you can use. Now, new kind of filter, and some of these have big names. This is a contraharmonic filter. Okay? And basically it's a modification on our geometric mean over here. And it's real interesting because it works well at eliminating salt noise or pepper noise, but not both. And with this filter, it's really and all of these are over the elements in that little neighborhood. Both sums are over the same thing. And I'll probably just stop writing these sums, or at least the summation. Okay? Now, This has a rather interesting property. If Q is greater than 0, it eliminates Tucker. If Q is less than 0, it eliminates Salt noise. And this shows what happens here if they're properly applied. Okay. Here's the original, well, this isn't the original image. This is pepper noise. This is salt noise. Now notice, we didn't put in salt and pepper. It's just one or the other. And then we show what happens when we filter it. Q, or order, okay, is our Q. So that's a Q of 1.5. So you sum up your elements, taking each one to that power, okay, and you've got then the division. And notice it does a pretty good job over here of getting rid of the pepper noise. I really don't personally think that the salt noise removal is quite as good. You know, I really don't think that the contrast is as good, but standard technique. But you can't get rid of both at the same time. Yes?
How would they find that Q though?
Well, this is the part you're going to like. Experimentally. You play with it and see what looks good. An awful lot of this, unless you really, really know things. In fact, I'm going to show you how you do optimum filtering by guessing at the optimum value. Think about that one for a moment. That'll make more sense. It's got some very, very, if you want to do it optimally, very, very awkward ratios of integrals and power spectral densities and stuff in it. So you just replace it by a constant. And then you try different constants to see which one makes it look the best. This part, when we're restoring images, it's mostly to make them look good. But you can do things like compensate for bad optics. It may be that you have a camera lens that isn't perfect. It may be that there is motion. You know, maybe you have a vehicle which is moving. You want to compensate for the blurring of the image. So there's a lot of things that you can actually do. Noise, though, is the standard thing which engineers are faced with getting rid of. And, okay, there is some amount of X-ray inspection that's done. It's not the most common thing in the world. You will probably see more of this type of salt and pepper noise with, for example, uncooled detectors in spacecraft. Uncooled detectors working in different spectral bands. You may see these kind of things. Okay. Now, your question about how do you know what value of Q to use is very good. There's something even more fundamental than what value of Q. The sign of Q. This is what happens when you put in the wrong sign on the previous two images. You keep the same order, you just got the sign backwards. Look at this. It's horrible. I can't say anything good about those results. It actually makes the noise worse. Well, they're behaving differently in the first place because, as I said, take a look at this. You know, this is the result with a positive Q. That's the result with a negative Q. Okay, pepper noise, salt noise, it didn't operate the same there. Okay, and the reason is that you've got a different power in the numerator and denominator. Okay, and you're applying that power to each element in the little mask. So it just doesn't behave that well. Well, it behaves fairly well. You just have to have the right picture for it to work well on. And obviously, if you get something like that, the big thing should be to recognize, well, either I need to try another type of filter, or the key thing is change the sign. The end isn't quite as critical as the sign of the, actually, the Q isn't as critical as the sign of the Q. Okay. Now, we get into a whole class of filters, and you're actually going to look at these and say, well, gee, those are all pretty obvious. And a lot of them are, and you just have to figure out when. We get into things called order statistics filters. And the whole idea is they're going to be like the median. They process a list. And you might take, if I, for each little neighborhood, for each little template that I have, what you might do is you might say, okay, for a 3x3, I've got 9 values. I'll pick the smallest value. I'll pick the largest value. I'll pick the value in the middle, the median. Or I'll compute the average. Or there's all kinds of these that are related to those n elements and ordering them. So the first one's the median. And we've seen that one before. And this is our little neighborhood that we're sliding along. So we just pick the median, the middle element. But we can do a max, and that's pretty obvious. It's just the max. Let's suppose it's a 3x3, the max of the 9 elements. You can do the minimum. When would you use a maximum or a minimum? It might be if you have salt or pepper noise, you might want to consider using them. But it's not the best. Okay. There's a midpoint filter. And this one is 1/2, and I guess I'll just put it in here. The maximum value over that neighborhood plus the minimum value over that neighborhood divided by 2. It's not an average of all of the elements. It's just the midpoint between the two extremes. All of these are on the notes that I'm going to scan in tonight. So, you know, writing down all of these formulas may be a waste. Okay. And, oh, let me remember here. Okay. Oh, this actually, I got ahead of myself. This is salt and pepper noise. We apply a median filter. We talked about it before, that a median filter does a really good job on salt and pepper. But it doesn't completely eliminate it. And this is what happens if you start applying multiple passes of a median filter. You don't have to do it once. You can do it over and over again. And what will happen is you will see some amount of blurring. And if you take a look, you know, you could say, well, gee, maybe on the small fingers or on these mid-sized fingers, I'm starting to see the edges shift a little. And that's the kind of effect you can expect. But we can switch to some of these other filters. And let's see, we have here a max filter and a min filter. Let's see, this is back on, I have to keep all of these straight, 5.8. Which one's this one? Okay, 5.8, so that's just a pepper noise and a salt noise. Okay, so the pepper noise and the salt noise. And I really think that the min filter did a really nice job here. You know, some of the other filters didn't do as well. That really did nicely. And you can see fingers are pretty good. Doesn't look bad. You know, now this is the kind of stuff, not everyone does image processing for autonomous vehicles for DARPA, okay? And in fact, that's probably a very unusual application. The kind of stuff that's far more likely is industrial inspection of products. You know, here you're actually probably wanting to do something eventually like count the fingers on the ICs or maybe count these. You're going to be looking for something that's either present or not present, or you want to measure the dimensions of it. So quality control and inspection is very, very big. And with salt noise or pepper noise, a max and a min filter actually didn't do a bad job. Okay. Now we throw in another, well, I'll tell you about the different ones here. We added uniform noise, and then we added salt and pepper noise to the uniform noise. You don't have to have just one distribution. You know, it could be that you have really cheap electronics. That's where you get your Gaussian noise or white noise. Actually, I should say uniform. It implies that it has a high and low limit. It might be band limited white. Okay, so it might be coming from electronics. Your salt and pepper noise might be coming from a detector. You might have shot noise or something like that if you have some kind of photomultiplier or something. Okay? So this is really nasty. We've got two types of noise together. Now, we've got four different varieties of filters here, just to see what they do. These are 5x5. As you start to get more and more noise, you may want to make the size of the filter larger. So this is a 5x5 arithmetic mean. Okay. 5x5 geometric mean. Remember, in the last one, the geometric mean, you know, the first time we showed it, worked really good. The combination of both types of noise, I think I'd go with the arithmetic. Now, here is a median filter, okay? And even though we've got the uniform noise plus the salt and pepper, the median really does do a nice job, okay, compared to the mean, arithmetic mean, and geometric mean. So median did well. However, we've got a new filter here, and it's really sort of one of these. It's what's called an alpha trimmed, actually it isn't an order. It's an alpha trimmed mean. And this is the kind of thing that I think you as graduate students really would like. A standard technique, and we often call it outlier rejection. I don't know if you've taken statistics courses. What it really means is that if we don't like the data, we throw away some of the data that we don't like. Okay? And what you might do is you might delete, and this is in an alpha trimmed, delete the lowest d over 2 values and the highest d over 2 values. And the idea here is that you usually have a large template, a large mask, because if you're going to throw away the top and the bottom of your list, then you've got to have something left over, because what we do is our estimate then is 1 over mn minus d. If we've got a 5 by 5, that's 25, and maybe we've got a d of 2, we throw away, or actually, that's not a good one, let's make d of 4. We'll throw away the top two values and the bottom two values. Actually, I should say the bottom two values and the top two. So you've got 25, you throw away 4, you've still got 21, Mn minus d represents the 21. Okay, and then, but we put in a little r indicating a reduced set. Okay, because we threw away from the neighborhood two lowest, two highest. Now, when you get into stuff a lot, in fact, some of you, I don't know if anyone actually tried fitting an equation to the lane lines and stuff. I mean, you could actually do stuff like that. What you get into with least squares regression, line fitting, is sometimes you have values which will really shift the value of that line off quite a bit. And it could be that you just have one bad value. You don't know where it came from. So this is a mathematical way to justify throwing away extreme data. And it's sort of like the central limit theorem. As I get stuff which is closer together, I get rid of the tails, okay, my means are going to actually be more stable. And they may actually be more meaningful. What? Yes. I was waiting for someone to catch these. Hey, statistics can be fun. Talk to Laparo. He's really good at this stuff. Because this gets into the kind of stuff that's called optimum filtering, but not quite yet. Okay. If you haven't guessed, Chapter 5 is like filter after filter after filter. And I'm going to try not to put you to sleep on all of this. But most of it is really common sense until we get to the optimum filters. Those make mathematical sense, but it takes a long time for you to understand the mathematical sense of them. Okay? We have adaptive noise reduction filters. And this uses a combination of local and global statistics. Up to now, I was only talking about something for the whole picture, or I was talking about something just for the template. Okay. An adaptive is, and we'll take a look at it, G of XY is our noisy image. Okay, this is our same noisy image, and this is the local mean. These now are the local variance and this is the global variance, the whole picture. Now, to understand this one, we have to look at some cases. Okay? The easiest one is if we don't have any noise. Then what happens? The variance for the whole image is zero. This is for the noise. And how did we get, by the way, these? Remember earlier when we were looking at the image and we were modeling the noise in regions? This would be using your estimate of global noise. And then how would you get the local variance? You're moving along that little template and you're computing the variance in that little square. Okay. So no noise, that's zero. This whole thing goes away. And the output is the input. And since this doesn't have noise in it, it's exact. So that's reasonable. Now, the first one is And I don't know if that's really the best one, but this is one we don't want to filter. The local variance of the image is very, very, very large. Okay? And you notice, if the local variance is very, very large, that makes this term small, and none of this comes into play. What does this mean? What this actually means is the following. When do you get a really big variance in an image? Exactly. Edges. If you go and have a sharp edge, all of a sudden the variance gets really big. The other possibility is you've got so much noise you can't figure out what's in there. Okay? But chances are it's a sharp edge, a big edge. So if you have a big edge, what's the problem with a median, with any kind of filter? You don't want it to move or eliminate an edge. So this is actually, this is the one that's processed by the adaptive filter. You don't want it to move the edge around. You don't want it to eliminate an edge. So that's good. So it behaves right in both the cases where it's zero or the local variance is really large. Okay? When the noise of the image is approximately the local variance, okay, so this would be approximately 1. This is now where something interesting happens. Okay? Basically, you're saying, okay, if I look at this little element, the noise in here is about the same as it is everywhere else. Okay? That's probably a good characteristic of like a white noise, a Gaussian noise, a lot of different kinds. But in that case, it's G minus G plus M. The G's cancel, and I get the mean. So if the noise looks like the rest of the noise in the rest of the image, we just replace it by the mean. Okay? So this is actually more subtle than what it looks, but the nice thing is you don't have to do the same processing at every point in the image. As we're moving along, you can do different processing at different points, and this builds it in. Okay? And so, and notice, by the way, our filters are getting bigger. 7x7, you know, we haven't used things like that. And by the way, notice another thing here. The additive Gaussian noise is zero mean, but look at the variance. It's huge. A variance of 1,000? That's pretty big. Big Gaussian. So it's spread out all over. In effect, it's blurry, and you sort of see it. So the arithmetic mean, okay, does it do that well on the image? You can see it really looks like it's starting to blur it out. And this is a 7x7. Part of the reason is we're making the window bigger. Why are we making the window bigger? To get our image back. If you've got noise, if you make the window bigger and bigger, it should average out better. But as it averages out better, it averages out everything because it's also averaging out your image. So your image is going away. But notice, okay, and here are the two. Here's geometric mean filtering. And notice compared to the original, like the size of the fingers. And let's suppose this might be a printed circuit board etch process that you were inspecting. You know, you're etching these and then putting surface mount components on it. Or maybe that's just plain copper before you put anything on it. You know, you'd look at this and say, oh, it's under-etched. It's much too big. There's way too much copper there. So you might be looking for stuff like that. But that's with the geometric mean, which didn't do too badly before. Now, here is an adaptive noise reduction, 7x7. And notice, compared to the arithmetic mean, the arithmetic mean's kept the dimensions about right, but notice these little areas right here, starting to shrink them. Looks like if you processed it some more, they might pinch off. Okay. But notice, this adaptive kept the size of the little fingers really pretty good. These fingers, you know, if that's what your goal was, with that kind of noise, it didn't do a bad job. Now, you might say, when in the world was all of this stuff done? This was actually done back in the 70s and 80s. This is basic statistics. Now, this one is really a bit more difficult. This was just adaptive noise reduction. This is an adaptive median filter. And this one, I'm not even going to give the algorithm. It's a little complicated, but it's on the notes. But we put in a lot of salt and pepper noise. Okay? It's really messy. Okay? You apply a median filter. Okay? And the median filter, I mean, with that much noise, you'd probably be very happy to get this. It's not too bad. But, okay, fingers are gone. All of the, on the IC, we've got problems with the fingers. I'm not sure if those are edges of traces or what they are, but low contrast, a lot of detail gone. Now, an adaptive median filter, what it actually does, here we were shifting back and forth whether we use the median value or we use basically the unfiltered value. Okay? With a median filter, what we're going to actually do is change the size of the template over which we're going to do the median. And it's sort of a two-step process. What you do is you start really, really small. And by the way, why do you want to start really, really small with the size of a template? Well, what did I say earlier? If you make your templates too big, it tends to average out. That's where you get your most problems. So you start with as small as you can. Well, I guess as small as you can would be a 1x1, but that's not too useful. Okay, but you start with a 3x3, and the first thing that you do is within that little region, what you want to do is characterize it as impulsive. Okay, and if you've got impulsive noise, it's going to drive it to 0 or 1. Okay? That's the kind of impulsive noise we're working with. Whereas in a normal image, your distribution would be between some gray value and another gray value. It wouldn't go to the extremes. Okay? So the idea is, if the median that I pick is outside or is at the extremes, you know, it's a 0 or a 1, then that's impulsive. So I've got an impulse captured in there. What I want to do is I want to keep making it bigger and bigger until the median isn't an impulse. I could have a lot of impulses in there because, like that really, really noisy thing over there, chances are in a 3x3, my median might be an impulse. Okay? So basically, make it big, but keep it as small as you can that it doesn't have an impulse in it. Okay? And that's pretty much what it does. And that's with up to a 7x7. So probably starting at a 3x3 and going up. Actually, we could do a 2x2, but we like to stick to odd numbers. So that's a very discriminatory thing. To avoid putting an impulse back into the picture. You see, if the result of the median is an impulse, you don't want to put an impulse into your output. So So that's what it's all trying to do. And notice, by keeping the size of the window varying and as tight and small as possible, notice, it really does a fine job in picking up details. Okay, it's got some holes in here in the small fingers for the contacts, but compared to this one, it's not bad, and compared to this original, that's really good. So there are ways to make these look good. Now, whole different kind of filter. We've got band pass and band reject filters. We use them for different things. We were just doing impulse noise, and we threw in some white and Gaussian noise from time to time. Okay? But you might want to get rid of bands of noise. And this is now coming more from looking at the Fourier transform of the image. I haven't told you situations in which you'd want to use these yet. Well, actually, I have. Remember that picture of something that I said was probably a moon rock? And what did the frequency distribution look like? It actually had a number of pretty strong frequencies on a circle. We might want a band reject filter that would eliminate everything in that circular band. Now, I'll be very honest. Okay. Most types of noise aren't going to be this well behaved, but they might come about because of the sensor you're using. It could be that you've got a special way of scanning it or coding it, and it makes it appear like there are breaks. Remember earlier we saw a picture of, I think, Florida from probably a overhead, a fairly high altitude. Actually, that had to be a satellite if we were seeing the whole of Florida. Okay, but remember, and it had scan lines in it. When you want to get rid of stuff like that, suppose someone gives you a TD image, and you look at it. Okay, now these, you can look at this, and you can see all the little rectangles from our projector. Okay, actually, they look square to me. Okay, but if you've got scan lines, you may want to get rid of them. Okay, and that's where some of these kind of filters might work. Well, guess what? You don't want to do an ideal filter. If I would plot this just in terms of, say, U and V, the ideal filter would do that. Ideal band reject. We know that you don't want to do that because you're going to get all kinds of problems from the sharp edges. You're going to get ringing everywhere. You don't want that. So you might want to use a Butterworth. It's got smoother edges. It's got constraints. Or a Gaussian. I prefer the Gaussians. Noise is Gaussian. Filters are Gaussian. Best part is the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. The inverse Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. You can never get rid of Gaussians. And you only have to learn one function. So Gaussians aren't bad. And it turns out they're very good models of what occurs in the real world. Okay, so how about that moon rock or whatever that was that we looked at earlier? See, look at that. Really nice textured noise. That might be due to the way it was scanned. Could be a low resolution solid state sensor. You get that image, you look at it in your computer, you Fourier transform it, and the thing you notice, okay, well, I guess I didn't draw my interference or noise sources the same over there, but you can see the same picture, a ring. You put a band reject filter in, it's zero where the noise is. You apply, you do the Fourier transform of this, which you have there. You have your band reject. You multiply the two together. You inverse Fourier transform it, and you shift it. You always got to remember to do your shift. So if you get something messy when you do your IFFT2, it's because you didn't put in the shift. And look, doesn't that look pretty good? That's a very impressive job. But you were lucky in that it was really nicely behaved noise. Okay. Don't count on stuff that being that good. Okay. This is actually interesting, and this is something we're going to do more and more. That's the picture of the noise. If I just took, instead of using a band reject, let's do a band pass. Let's just say, what does the stuff in this frequency range that we're going to throw out look like? And that's it. Notice, it really does look like woven cloth, doesn't it? When you see patterns, okay, usually a filter can be very good. And I don't know, maybe there's some application of this to inspecting fabric if you end up working for a clothing company. Now, you can make all kinds of other filters. You can make notch filters, and these are really good. You can go in and get rid of, like, just one frequency. Well, but how about two frequencies? You know, instead of doing this circular band reject here, I have eight or nine of these. I could put, like, eight or nine nulls and just cancel, put the nulls right on top of those and cancel them out. How in the world do you design that? Well, I've got news for you. The only way you can do it is you're at your computer, you look at the Fourier transform and you say, that one's noise, that one's noise, that one's noise, and you eliminate them by hand and inverse Fourier transform and say, does it look good? You see, this is good. These are jobs for engineers. Well, maybe technicians, but at least they're jobs. Okay. Oh, there's our state of Florida. I knew that thing was going to come back, although hopefully it won't come back election night. Okay. And this is really interesting. Okay. This might be an application if you're working with a digital camera. And in the early days, NOAA, NASA, different kinds of satellites, and you'd get scan lines in here because they were using analog sensors instead of digital. Okay, so you look at the Fourier transform, and I've got news for you. You look at that, and you don't see where in the world the noise is, do you? I mean, to me, that doesn't look too bad. Okay, it's got the strong axes, but what do you want to do? Well, it turns out that what we have is, what do you find objectionable in this image? There's a lot of horizontal lines. Okay. Which, think about it, what is the Fourier transform of those going to look like? It's in the opposite direction. Okay, so I'm going to have frequency components that way and that way due to the horizontal lines. And the closer they're going to get together, the further apart my the further out my frequencies will go. So this is an example of, you need to know something technical about your image, and you need to know actually how far apart your scan lines are. So here is our filter. Basically, we're going to eliminate all of the high frequency components due to the scan lines. Why would we not want to, by the way, make that go all the way down to zero? Yeah, that's right. You'd completely mess up the brightness of the image. And remember, 0, 0 is in both X and Y. We're really here only after Y. Horizontal lines. Okay. So we put this in. And this is actually pretty interesting. Multiplying this by that and inverse Fourier transforming and shifting, you get this. Now, that actually does a fairly good job, doesn't it? Now, if you remember back when we used the Gaussian filter, to get rid of those lines, it blurred a lot of things out. This is fairly sharp. You know, look at the clouds or islands. Well, these are clouds, I guess, and that's islands over there. But you've kept pretty good detail in here. And by the way, this is the noise. Well, it's not as nice as it's not really nice horizontal lines, okay? And I don't know exactly how that image was taken. Sometimes you can have laser scanners, you can have side-looking radar. There's a whole bunch of different techniques, but you can process it all the same way. And I notice I ran over time-wise, and I know you're anxious to get out there and finish your midterm project. So I'll let you get going to work on that. And if you need comedy relief, you can always watch the election returns tonight.